What do Hollywood actors, Uber drivers, substitute teachers, and your home contractor have in common? Well, all are in one way or the other members of the gig economy. That is, people who don't have the steady traditional jobs that many of us are used to, but rather work on an assignment-to-assignment basis. Gigs, as it were. Many people are getting rich off the gig economy today. Let's say the founders of Uber, who do nothing but put gig workers, that is the drivers of Uber cars, in touch with Uber customers. But just how good is the gig economy for workers themselves? How's it all going to work out? Well, we're going to explore that today with a Gallup expert on this evolving part of our economy. And then for our big number of the week, we'll look at the number of Americans who have a positive image of the pharmaceutical industry. Very interesting results. Hello, everybody. I'm Dr. Frank Newport, and welcome to our Gallup podcast. Our special guest today, joining us from beautiful Omaha, Nebraska, is Shane McFeely, analyst and researcher on our global practice team here at Gallup and an integral part of the newly released Gallup report, The Gig Economy and Alternative Work Arrangements. Shane, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Frank. I'm happy to be here.
And a little about your background. You've studied psychology and industrial psychology. That's your background before you started working on all these types of things here at Gallup.
Correct. I'm an organizational psychologist by trade, which means that I look into matters of employee selection, motivation, training, as well as kind of the research methodology and advanced analytics that kind of coincide with those type of work streams.
Now, this report says the gig economy and alternative work arrangements. That says a lot. Some of the alternative work arrangements that we hear a lot about today have to do with things like remote working and so forth. But this report doesn't focus on that. It focuses on the precise nature of the work agreement between employee and employer. It used to be kind of a lifelong contract. You know, I went to work for Procter & Gamble right out of college and stayed working for Procter & Gamble till I retired, as an example. But now we have much more movement. And then this so-called gig economy, that's what we're talking about, right? Or tell us, how do we define or how should we define the gig economy?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I would say across the research, there's not really one of those agreed upon definitions that everybody can point to in terms of the gig economy. You know, some folks are really referring strictly to those on-demand platform type workers, those folks that are jumping on a technology platform and picking up work through those Uber type folks. But really, that's really a small subset of what we're referring to here. In the broader gig economy, we try to include workers who basically just don't have that traditional long-term employee relationship that we typically see. So this is made up of workers who might work on call. They might work for a temporary help agency. They may be independent contractors providing their own services. So there's really quite a grab bag of types of workers that we included in our broader definition of the gig economy.
And with that broad definition, Shane, what's our estimate? What percent of the workforce is in this type of job relationship as they work every day?
Yeah, so from our data suggested that about 29% of all workers are doing some type of gig work or alternative work arrangement as their primary job. And this, again, is either full-time or part-time. But if we look at just full-time estimates, that number is at about 24%, about one in four workers. And when we think about those folks that have those side gigs or those side hustles that they're often referred to as, that estimate can get up to about 36% when we consider both their primary and secondary jobs.
Yeah, I mentioned at the outset, Hollywood actors always like to think of them as the gig workers from the get-go, right? Or Broadway musicians, that is musicians who play in the pit on Broadway musicals, freelance musicians. You know, there are a lot of people around for a long time in the workforce who go job to job and who sit it out and don't have jobs from time to time. But as you've looked at it and as you've outlined in this report, tell us a little about the different kinds of gig workers. You hinted at it just a moment ago, but I know you outlined in the report four or five different types of people who could be under this broad umbrella.
Yeah. So we actually use some of the Bureau of Labor Statistics language to kind of think about these different categories. So again, like you said, contract firm workers, independent contractors, on-call workers, temporary workers, and then probably the newest category, which is these online platform workers, those folks that are working through a digital intermediary to either do tasks either fully online or they go meet folks in person. such as like an Uber driver or somebody working for TaskRabbit. But I think you're right in that it's certainly not a one-size-fits-all approach to measurement of this. You know, I think we have contractors that they have multiple different types of contractual obligations. And I think that we're really just scratching the surface of, you know, all the different alternative work arrangements that we have that are non-traditional.
Yeah, looking at the past and then looking into the future, what do we see? Has this been growing? And do we anticipate that this type of employment, this gig employment, as we call it, is going to increase in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the interesting questions. I think up until probably this year, the mainstream media has really been saying things around the growth of the gig economy. That really comes from the work that was done by economists Katz and Kruger in 2015. And so when they looked back at the estimates from 2005, they saw quite an increase from what the Bureau of Labor Statistics found. And so, you know, I think all of the rhetoric around, you know, the growth of the gig economy was really centered around that finding. And in fact, they went even so far to say 95% of all net job growth that happened from 2005 to 2015 could actually be attributed to this gig economy. Now, I would say this year, the Bureau of Labor Statistics released their newest findings of that same survey, and they found that actually there was a slight decrease from 2005, but they had quite a gap, and we went through a recession during that gap. So it's difficult to say what that trend marker would say. And I would also say that official statistics on this topic are really mixed. So, you know, we have that study by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, but at the same time, we also have data from the IRS that looks at the folks that fill out those 1099s, those independent contractors. And that number has been steadily increasing since about the mid 90s. So I think our data would be more supportive of what Katz and Kruger, as well as what the IRS is finding in terms of seeing that growth. I think, you know, the other thing that we're seeing, that some of the limitations of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, what they do is it only looks at their primary job and not necessarily all the multiple side gigs that folks can have.
But Shane, I want to cut to the heart of the matter. I think a lot of people that are listening have this question about who is this good for? One approach might be this is great for employers because they don't have to keep people on the payroll on a constant basis when they don't need them. They can just use employees when they need them and not pay them when they don't. That sounds great. And maybe a lot of people are thinking this is bad for employees because they go through periods of time where they don't have work. But what does our data show? Is this whole gig economy arrangement good for the employer, good for the employee, bad for both, or is it a mixed picture?
Frank, I think you really hit that on the head there, because there's benefits and challenges associated with both parties, both the workers as well as the organization. So as you mentioned, the organizations benefit because, you know, they're not paying benefits. They don't have to keep someone on full time, and they can get that, you know, special expertise on demand when they need it and don't have to keep someone on salary full time. I think on the negative side for those organizations, they really have limited control over what those gig workers can really do from a legal perspective. And they often pay a little bit of a premium for that type of expertise if they go through some sort of on demand type way. Now, the other thing is that, you know, there's from a organizational standpoint, there's not really a sense of loyalty from those workers, because gig workers can tomorrow up and go work for your competitor even at the same time that they're working for you. So those are kind of the pros and cons from the organizational standpoint. I think we really become enamored with this can I be my own boss sort of mindset. And I think really the gig economy is really helping allow that process of being your own boss. But I think from the worker's perspective, the emergence of the gig economy can see the benefits from increased autonomy. They also have basically work that can fit around their life. So students, working mothers, those that maybe have to care for a family member, they might have been out of the workforce and may not have worked if they didn't have this type of gig or temporary work. So you can really see how it might help out those types of people. On the other hand, you also hear a lot of articles and a lot of news stories about some of the poor working conditions among contingent workers, temporary agency, some of those folks. And then also the idea that, you know, certainly some of those arrangements can appear as if the organization are exploiting workers in order to get out of paying benefits. And so that's certainly not a situation that's beneficial for the workers. I think from Gallup's data, what we've found is that they're getting a little bit of both depending on the type of situation that they're in. So if they are more of that, I can be my own boss, they really are seeing that autonomy, that independence that they want to get. But if you're a contingent worker, you're often stuck between two different entities. That is the hiring entity as well as the contractual entity that probably hired you. So I think that it really depends on the type of situation that you have and the type of arrangements that you have with that organization.
Yeah, I know in reading the report that we have this distinction between happy or desperate, right? So some of these gig workers, and I would include there maybe, as I said a moment ago, a retired baby boomer who loves the idea to be able to do some things on a gig basis to supplement their retirement and keep them busy. They might be happy, but you might be desperate if you're younger and have a family and need a steady income but can't get it and therefore have to depend on these gigs off and on. So what you're telling me, I think, Shane, is that it really depends, right? Whether this is good or bad.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, another finding that we had in the report is that the gig workers were much less likely to say that they were doing their preferred type of work compared with traditional workers. They were also less likely to say that what they're doing was their long-term career. However, you still had a majority of those gig workers saying that they preferred that job and it was their long-term career. So again, I think it's really dependent upon the situation and why they're entering into that gig economy arrangement in the first place. If it's out of need, I think that's where folks struggle and they're not going to have good work experiences. But if it's out of that, I can, you know, entrepreneurial spirit, I think, you know, those folks are really thriving in the gig economy.
What about the differences of those who we classify as being in the gig economy and other researchers might? Does it vary by age, other demographic characteristics?
Yeah, so we've found some mixed findings around age. So, I mean, there's throughout the literature, I think there has been both findings about showing how millennials are by and large joining these technology platforms and trying to be their own boss. However, in our report, we found actually that baby boomers were slightly more likely to be in the gig economy. Again, I'm not sure that we would say that point to that finding and say that's going to be true everywhere. I think really, you know, you can see where older folks might be trying to supplement that income that might be their Social Security, their 401k or pension, whereas maybe younger folks, when they're younger in their career, they may not be making the salaries that is required to, you know, kind of make it in life. And so you often need those side hustles just to make ends meet. So when you get to that point where you're, you know, really trying to force it economically, I think that's where we start to see those negative reactions from the workers.
Let me talk to you a little bit about some other Gallup research that we've been doing for a long time, and that has to do with engaged workers, employee engagement. And we talk about and have research which really documents how important it is to have your workers not just satisfied with their job, but actually engaged with the job. What does this gig economy trend signify for that? If I'm an employer, should I be concerned or worried that if I'm shifting more towards having temporary workers, gig economy workers, that it's going to be harder to get those workers that I really want, those workers that are highly engaged with my company and its mission, the ones that are really going to make a difference in my profitability and the success of my company?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think when we looked at it from sort of Gallup's traditional view on employee engagement, we really did see that gig workers had a slight bump in terms of employee engagement over traditional workers. Now, I would say that likely the definition of what engagement is shifts a little bit depending on the arrangement that you have with your organization. So, you know, gig workers may need, it all depends on worker needs. So gig workers may or may not need, you know, career growth, and they're probably not looking for that organization to provide them with opportunities to learn and grow or friends in the organization, things of that nature. However, they are really looking for that transactional nature, that contractual obligation from that organization. So, you know, basically that relationship is somewhat determinant by the type of contract that you have in place between the worker and the organization. And so if one party, specifically the organization, is not, say, paying fairly or inaccurately, or maybe expanding the scope of what was contractually agreed upon. I think those are also some big factors for what engagement might mean and what loyalty might mean in terms of return workers at the same organization.
Yeah, all of this seems to suggest, and I know this is something that you do, and we do a lot of at Gallup, and that's working with company management. All of this seems to suggest that managers, companies' management has to really do different things when it comes to managing these gig workers than when it comes to managing a more traditional salaried workforce.
Absolutely. And I think that's really a struggle of, because there's not a clear line from a legal perspective right now about how much control those managers and those account managers at those organizations can have over the work of that organization. You know, the California Supreme Court recently ruled on gig economy about having an ABC rule, which essentially requires that gig workers, for them to be employed or hired by an organization, they have to be doing work that's outside of the normal scope of what the company typically does for their business. And so that's kind of that's a different set of rules than what we've had in the past. And so if those would get adopted quite widely, you could see some really shift or some hesitancy likely from organization using this type of labor. And so I think there is a real tough balance for organizations right now in kind of navigating these waters of constantly changes in the legal environment. But I think also at a management level, I think that there's also some difficulties on teamwork, right? So, I mean, and project management. So project management has to be very clear if you're going to have an outside independent contractor come in and be a part of a project team, and that contractual obligation needs to be made sure and spelled out very cleanly for both parties on the outset.
I'm going to circle back around, Shane, before we go to the question I asked you earlier. What is the future? You just mentioned there may be some legal implications where it may be harder for employers in the future to hire gig workers. So we may not see the employment culture moving totally in this direction. But just to re-ask, if we're sitting here 10 years from now talking, Shane, are we going to find a lot more of this kind of temporary gig worker employer arrangement or not?
Yeah, I think if you read a lot of the industry reports on the future of work, I think by and large, they're all sort of betting the house that this is going to continue to increase and be a trend for the foreseeable future. And I think, as you mentioned at the outset of this podcast, is that, you know, we've in some way or another, we've had this type of work arrangement for quite some time. You know, we've had these independent folks that would come in and be contractors on demand. I would say that in terms of the future, you know, technology is definitely going to continue to enable these types of alternative workers. And I think in response to that, you're going to also continue to see proposed legislation. You see it in the UK. We've seen it in California in efforts to try to provide a little bit more hard edges around the rights of workers and kind of the do's and do nots for organizations as well. So I think, you know, probably public policy is going to be a huge part of this as we move forward and as we see a proliferation of these type of platforms.
Our Gallup report on this is entitled The Gig Economy and Alternative Work Arrangements. Shane, if people want to find out more, they can get this report?
Absolutely. You can get it on Gallup.com as well as some of our newsletters. And then we have some articles that have been trickling out on Gallup Business Journal online that outlines some of the more kind of take home and what do I do about this trend moments for organizational leaders.
Very, very fascinating. And I should say very, very important trends in the workplace. Shane McFeely, analyst and researcher on our Gallup Global Practice team, who is an integral part of writing this report, The Gig Economy and Alternative Work Arrangements. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Frank. Have a great day.
And our big number of the week. 30%. That's the percent of Americans who have a positive image of the pharmaceutical industry. That is not a good number. We gave Americans a long list of business and industry sectors and asked them for each one, do you have a positive or negative image? And that 30% for the pharma industry is next to the bottom on the entire list. What's the only entity that came in with a lower positive rating than the pharmaceutical industry? It was the federal government, with a 26% positive image. That's our podcast this week. We ask you to subscribe to our podcast, and you can listen to what we have to say every week, looking at the events of the world, our culture, and society through the eyes of the people themselves. I'm Dr. Frank Newport, Gallup Editor-in-Chief. Thanks for listening to our Gallup Podcast.